Hi guys, welcome back to Stat Dose Podcast. We're here with another Turbo Dose today, and we're going to be talking about biliary tract pathology. And we're going to talk about gallstones as an overview, briefly talk through cholecystitis and biliary colic as presentations. We're going to talk about pancreatitis and then finish off with a dessert of cholangitis. Thinking about gallstones and sort of giving us a bit of a background as to the pathology here, what does bile contain?
As you well know, because you've got the same notes I do, that bile contains cholesterol, bile pigments, which is broken down hemoglobin, and phospholipids. Gallstones, essentially, they develop when any of these substances become supersaturated. Most Western worlds, gallstones are cholesterol in origin based on largely our slightly unhealthy diet. So overall, 10% of patients in the UK will develop gallstones at some point in their life, which is a significant proportion of people. And risk factors for those include the quite un-PC, fair, fat, fertile female 40, any sudden, quite aggressive weight loss, so often post-bariatric surgery, and any cause of loss of bile salts. So if you have something like an ileal resection where you can't absorb the bile salts in you.
So thinking about presentations that are to do with the biliary tract, cholecystitis comes up as one of the most sort of common presentations here. So cholecystitis, thinking about that itis element, is different from biliary colic, which I think the two kind of cross over quite frequently and get confused. So it differentiates from biliary colic in that there's an inflammatory element, hence that kind of itis for the, you Latin heads. It's due to gallbladder dissension, and you get a resulting ischemia and sort of necrosis of the mucosal wall. You can get repeated attacks of this, and that can actually cause a chronic cholecystitis, and the gallbladder walls become thickened, they get scarred, and the gallbladder can actually shrink. So clinical signs and symptoms for this is one of those classic surgical abdomens. So usually this is a continuous right upper quadrant or epigastric pain. Sometimes with a local peritonism, plus or minus a gallbladder mass. Vomiting and a pyrexia fever are quite common, so they'll also have COVID. And then on top of that, in terms of your abdominal examination, we want to be thinking about Murphy's sign, positive in about 80% of cholecystitis patients. It's where you place two fingers over the right upper quadrant, just below the costal margin, and you actually ask the patient to take a deep breath in, and as they do so, apply pressure. And this should trigger or exacerbate their pain. Then when you repeat that over on the left side, there shouldn't be pain, so there shouldn't be a kind of radiating pain, which would suggest a more global or generalised disease course. So Matt, in terms of investigations for this, what would you do sort of hospital-wise?
Blood tests, ultimately. So they're likely to show a degree of inflammation, as you say, so the itis. The LFTs as well may also be deranged if there's a degree of obstruction there, so a degree of cholestasis. Ultrasound might show a thickened gallbladder wall. There might be some fluid around the gallbladder as well, and that might be visible on CT as well if you do get a CT in these patients instead. Management Joe, what do you do in the community?
Chuck them some amoxicillin out the window, usually.
Does that help?
So in the community, it's about actually differentiating between whether they're sick or not. Sick, they need to be referred in for an admission under surgeons. But actually, if it's a more of a brewing cholecystitis, if it's a lower grade, then it can be managed with oral antibiotics in the community with referral for imaging. But clearly, that's different for you in hospital. Commonly, I suppose, you'll be seeing these individuals at the sort of more severe end of their pathology. And so how do you kind of manage that area?
I really hope we're seeing the severe end of cholecystitis. It's antibiotics is the key. We give them IV because it must be better. But ultimately, the definitive treatment for cholecystitis is to have the gallbladder removed, so cholecystectomy. Depends on the flavour of the month. You know, some surgeons will take them out acutely. Other surgeons like to wait for the inflammation to settle down because it's technically a difficult operation if your gallbladder is inflamed and very sticky to the liver and all the other structures around there. So some surgeons will wait about 6 weeks or so after the cholecystitis has settled to take the gallbladder out. But ultimately, that's the key. In some of our older, frailer patients, you might just stick a drain instead, so a cholecystostomy, and that is essentially just to drain any infection if there's some pus developing around there. And that's quite a useful option for those who aren't fit for the theatre.
So that's cholecystitis. Matt, what about biliary colic?
So biliary colic's a bit different. So there's a lack of that inflammation, as you said. You get intermittent stome impaction in the cystic duct or in the ampulla of vata. It gives you that same sort of pain. So it's often epigastric rubber quadrant, as you were saying. It might radiate through to the back. You might get a bit of nausea. You might get a bit of vomiting. But the key difference in terms of history from biliary colic to cholecystitis is the time of pain. So proper biliary colic pain generally lasts around 4 hours or so, 3 to 5 hours, something like that, and then resolves by itself as that stone becomes disimpacted from the cystic duct. And ultimately, because there's no inflammation, your blood tests are normal, so there's no inflammatory response, and equally your ultrasound is pretty unexciting as well. You're likely to see some gallstones. In terms of management of biliary colic, it's largely a pain control problem. Ultimately, again, a cholecystectomy is required once stable. So moving on to pancreatitis then, Joe?
Inflammation of the pancreas, and then you get that release of enzymes that cause autodigestion of the organs. It's an incredibly painful process. It's important to remember that pancreatitis is very, very commonly associated with alcohol dependency or excess, but it can be a presentation due to gallstones. So we just have to remember those two as the most common causes. Other common causes, Matt? It can come under an acronym, don't they?
I get smashed. I think that, as you said, no one's remembered gallstones, alcohol. Idiopathic is a surprisingly large cause. And the other really big one is the post-ERCP patients. But otherwise, have a look at I Get Smashed in your own time. If you're watching on YouTube, I'll stick a picture up.
You're very kind, Matt. and so how does pancreatitis present?
Generally, really severe epigastric pain, often, well, classically radiating through to the back. That's not always present because the pain is often very severe. So often a lot of vomiting as well. As you say, they can be a little bit extreme, so they can be quite hypotensive, often very tachycardic, often sweaty. So they might need a decent fluid resuscitation. In terms of your investigations, your amylase is key to diagnosing. So in when we talk about our approach to abdominal pain, you mentioned it's important to always take an amylase when we're assessing these patients. And that needs to be approximately three times the upper limit of normal to be considered pathological. Now, lipase is one of the more sensitive and more specific tests, but it's also a lot more expensive. So, you know, the NHS being the NHS, most hospitals will use amylase. Imaging-wise, you tend to look for the complications of pancreatitis rather than sort of diagnostic imaging. So the key complications that you're looking for are abscess formation, any pseudocyst development, any free fluid in the abdomen or around the pancreas, and particularly necrosis of the pancreas. If you get necrosis of the pancreas, that's a very bad sign that somebody's going to need significant IV antibiotics, if not debridement in theatre.
So management of an acute presentation of pancreatitis is actually relatively minimalistic, isn't it, Matt? So it's simply fluids, pushing fluids and analgesia, sometimes quite significant analgesia, to actually get this pain under control. Antibiotics aren't indicated for pancreatitis, but they are indicated for some of the complications of pancreatitis. Severe pancreatitis is usually initially managed in the ED and then moved on to HDU or ICU. So that's pancreatitis. And then lastly, as I say, a dessert of cholangitis. So Matt, tell us about cholangitis.
The common bile duct becomes obstructed and infected. This may well be related to a gallstone, can be related to tumour or anything that's causing compression of the CBD. It presents with that classic Charcot's triad, so you get a fever, right and quadrant pain, jaundice. And the key with the management, these patients are very septic. They're unwell because of the infection, they're unwell because the liver is starting to fail as well. They require very close monitoring, IV antibiotics, IV fluids, good supportive management. You can perform endoscopic drainage if these patients are severely unwell. These are patients you want to get senior staff involved with quickly. Consider, again, HDU, ICU type systems.
So that's just a quick run-through of biliary tract pathologies. We've talked about cholecystitis as the sort of inflammatory component, with biliary colic being more of a sort of colicky intermittent stone blockage presentation. We've moved on to talk about pancreatitis and its management with analgesia and fluids and referral. And then finished with cholangitis, which can be identified in those who are quite a lot sicker with jaundice and treated via IVs, antibiotics and potentially endoscopic drainage. Always looking for your feedback, so please do let us know, give us an email, and we will see you next time.